Welcome to Experience Health Radio, presented by Cingola Consulting in collaboration with Stericycle Communication Solutions. Cingola Consulting was founded on the basic principle that the patient should be at the center of every decision made by a healthcare organization. Our mission is to help organizations realize their investments in technology, employees, clinicians, and most importantly, their patients. Stericycle Communication Solutions is a service of Stericycle Incorporated and is the industry-leading communication solution provider for inbound, outbound, and automated call center communications. Today, we bring together industry leaders on air to engage in conversations about their patient experience with a focus on the developments, integration, and optimizations in areas that have the greatest opportunity for improvement in healthcare today.
And hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Fran Horner, co-founder of Cingola Consulting and today's host of Experience Health Radio. We're excited to share with our audience our experiences and the experiences of our guests every week on demand through our website and downloaded through iTunes. Today's topic is very interesting and close to my heart. It's investing in our own, the value of employee development. You know, we all know that having employees can be tough sometimes. Managing people can be extraordinarily difficult. Plus, each person is another huge investment from your organization. So the question for today is, how do you engage and develop high-quality talent at every level of your organization? And with tips from everything from crafting and leveraging a strong employment brand to individualized development programs, today's show provides critical guidelines that will help change how you think about your workforce. So joining us today is Jane Shays-Dowd, the Director of Learning and Organizational Development at the College of American Pathologists. And I've known Jane for a while, and she has an extraordinary background. She has over 20 years of experience in the field of learning and development, as well as a master's in education from Northwestern University. Prior to joining the College of American Pathologists, Jane was the chief learning officer at North Shore University Health System. That's where we first met. She has received numerous awards and recognitions over the course of her illustrious career, including the CLO Magazine Bronze Award for leading business change for her role in leading a large-scale training initiative to transition over 8,000 healthcare providers to a new electronic health record. And speaking from personal experience, a results-driven, great individual and an expert at learning and organizational development functions, and that's why we're so excited to have her join us today. So welcome to the show, Jane. It's great to have you.
Hi, Fran. Very pleased to be here. Thank you for inviting me to participate. I'm really pleased to be able to contribute to what you're creating here.
Well, that's so nice, Jane. As always, let's just jump right in. I know you know, how valuable your time is. So let's first talk about your role at the College of American Pathologists. Like, how long have you been there and what are your objectives there?
I've been at the College of American Pathologists, or what we refer to as the CAP, about 3 years. I've been in learning and organizational development, and my role is really to help the college continue to advance and adapt and change with changing business circumstances while making sure we're really achieving our business goals. I work with the employees, leaders, and the organization as a whole to really ensure that we're performing at our best. And my job is really about developing people's skills on an individual team and the whole college as an organization to make sure that we have the talent we need performing in the roles, effectively in their roles, and that we can adapt and drive the changes we need to succeed.
You know, honestly, Jane, I'll admit to you that when I was in management, I didn't spend as much time as I should have on the development of my own employees. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I did spend some time. But in retrospect, I wasn't as consistent and thorough as I could have been. And I'm sure it would have been helpful to me over the years if my own manager had spent more time with me. So help us understand why organizations should take stock of their human capital. And what is the value in employee development?
Well, if you think about service organizations, and that's what we are in healthcare, we're service organizations. it's really the people that are providing the service, and they are our greatest, most important resource. So the question is, what are we doing to invest in them if they're that important to the experience we're providing our patients, our providers, our patients and customers? What are we doing to make sure our greatest asset performs at its best? So that's really the value here. Those organizations that really understand the real criticality of each and every one of those interactions gets the notion that you've got to continue to invest in them to make sure you're really maximizing potential. And quite frankly, it's a win-win. From the employee's perspective, they want to be part of an organization that cares enough to invest in growing their talents. And so if you can find that sweet spot, what's going to make me as an employee feel like you care about me enough to invest in me, and what's going to make you feel like it's worthwhile that I'm adding to the business value? So most organizations have figured it out, which is why you see professionals like me in learning and organizational development.
No, that's a good point. You know, I came across a Harvard Business Review study recently, and it was entitled "Why Top Young Managers Are in a Nonstop Job Hunt." And I think what that said to me was the dissatisfaction with some employee development efforts appears to fuel early exit. This report focused on companies that generally satisfy the need for the on-the-job development, but they value these opportunities, which include, you know, these high visibility positions and significant increases in responsibility. But it doesn't seem like they're getting much in the way of formal development, such as training, mentoring, and coaching. And these are the things I think that employees value, you know, have the most value for employees. So how does an organization make itself attractive to current employees so that there's a continuous buy-in, not just during, you know, the honeymoon stage or the hiring stage?
You know, it's a great question, Fran. If you think about what motivates most of us, there's been a fair amount of research on this, and it probably feels intuitive to you. We want to work for an organization that has a sense of purpose. And we want to grow and learn on the job. And many people refer to this as developing mastery. We also want a sense of autonomy. These are some of the things that motivate most of us as employees. And if we just hear great things in orientation, but we don't feel that as we progress in our time in an organization, that one, that you're working for something that really matters, purpose; two, that the organization cares enough to invest in you, and that's helping you grow and develop that mastery, and that they care enough to really tap into your strengths so that you can make the contributions with your own autonomy as opposed to being told what to do every turn and step of the way. Those organizations that get the real motivational power here understand that they've got to really capitalize on each and every experience that they offer to help that employee feel those things and develop on the job. You know, one of the things that the research tells us as well is that most learning for us as adults in the work environment really does happen through day-to-day experiences. The problem is we're not clear about what it is we want to learn, what our goals are specifically. And so when we have these experiences, we don't make the most of it. We don't farm it for learning, for insight, from coaching, from feedback, from discussion, so that we're really clear we've made progress. So lots of highly developmental opportunities for us with every cross-functional assignment, stretch assignments, new goals, new roles, plenty of learning to be had, but most of the time we're just not clear that new role just really taught me project management skills, or that new experience working on a cross-functional team truly built my relationship management and stakeholder engagement skills. So connecting the dots for employees around first getting clear, what do we want to learn? What do you need to learn to be effective in your role? And then as you proceed through different experiences, whether they're formal or informal, helping people see how they've grown or coaching them through different places where they're stumbling so they truly can grow. So informal learning is a giant goldmine of opportunity if we connect up the dots. And then, of course, formal learning is a real gift if the organization can support it. And I spend a lot of time architecting formal learning programs that also combine experience on the job so So you're really blending the two together so that people can learn new concepts and directly apply it right away to really get some growth.
So help me understand, because I'm reading so much about millennials and, you know, okay, I'll admit, you know, I was the one who was self-motivated and, you know, got a paycheck and that's how I knew my value. But it's different with millennials. And how do we help millennials understand that some of it is their responsibility to help develop, but it's also their manager's responsibility to engage in a way that connects with them? How is that different?
Well, one of the first things we need to do is really make clear for those two different roles what their responsibilities are. So for the millennials, and this is true for all of our employees, we really clearly say, hey, you are the primary driver of your own learning and development. You're in charge. You need to take the lead. The good news is the organization is here to support you, and in particular, your manager plays an important role in that. But if you want to learn and grow, you've got to take the lead. So a lot of people are sitting back and waiting for people to do it to them versus stepping forward and taking control. That's step one. And then from the manager's perspective, I spent a lot of time in organizations really clarifying to the managers, people managers in particular, this is a big part of your role description. It's not a little extra that you do periodically when there's a spare moment, but rather people managers, this is your job. So people managers, your job is to set clear expectations, to provide feedback, to coach, to mentor, and to do it in a way where people really are growing versus you telling them what to do. And then lastly, making sure that when things don't go so well, whether there's performance gaps, that you're doing a good job of really understanding what these gaps are and helping them with the right solutions. So setting expectations on what the roles are for each of the players is really key. And for millennials in particular, they are very growth hungry and impatient. And of course, this is a generalization. But if you're hungry and impatient and you don't see a clear connection to what your boss is doing, maybe they're coaching you, didn't even realize they were coaching you, you need to talk very overtly about it, both the manager and the employee, to talk about what you want, where you want to grow, and where you want to go, and for the manager, how you're helping.
You know, you've hit it spot on. You know, for managers to engage and connect with their employees in a way that maintains and heightens their passion and garners their greatest contribution, they really need some tools. And but more importantly, they actually need time. And we've had clients tell us, as a rule, their managers really just don't have either. So managers are often forced to thrust their new employees and their veterans into the work, partially or completely, and yet they have the same expectations of greatness. So, you know, they say that employees leave managers, not companies. How do you help managers, directors, supervisors, any of those realize their full potential in order to keep great employees? And what tools do they get so that they can be the best at that role?
That's a great question, Fran. And I think for most folks, they haven't taken the time to really add up how much time is spent in dealing with employee turnover or underperforming employees. When you think about all the, you know, work that goes into finding a new hire and then onboarding that new hire, and then all the work that goes into dealing with performance problems, you just add that up, and then you'll see there's a clear return on investment message for more proactively investing in your employees' development, hands down. So in terms of those investments, you know, not every organization has a lot of money or a lot of time. In fact, for those of us in the field of learning and development, we have let go a long time ago highly expensive and big, huge time commitment programs. I mean, I used to teach a leadership development program that took people off-site for a full week in a hotel with 7 days of development at exercises and lectures and experiences. We're lucky if we get a few hours these days. So if you have time for formal learning, you really got to make the most of it. Consider it a precious resource. And any formal learning investment you make has to have multiple direct opportunities to apply whatever knowledge nuggets and insights you gain directly to the work. People aren't very tolerant for theoretical exercises anymore. Because time is so precious, you got to make the most of every experience where you bring people together in a formal setting. So application is key. And the supervisors play a critical role in that. So for all the learning experiences we design, we make sure to design both pre- and post-experiences. So for example, if an employee is coming to a class, we want to make sure the manager knows they're coming, that they have a discussion with the manager about what their goals are for coming, and they come in actually thinking through what are the problems that this class might help them solve back on the job, and have that discussion with their supervisor to get input. Then for the experience itself, we try to use very customized, practical, realistic examples of what happens in our organization at the college and have them go back and talk with their supervisors and their work colleagues and often their direct reports about how they're going to make use of that information immediately after they leave the learning experience. Recently, CAP invested a great deal in our people managers with a customized program that was really built on those principles, where we asked them to do pre-work and talk to their bosses before they came. Then they participated in a series of half-day sessions. And between these half-day sessions, they had application assignments where they had to go try stuff out, see what worked, really build some new skills and, if you will, muscle memory in trying out new ways of doing things, and then coming back and talking about what worked and what didn't. And then finally, we had peer coaching wired into this learning experience so that they could not only talk to their supervisors, try things with their direct reports, but they could get together with their peers and exchange experiences, ideas around what works for them. So a more holistic approach these days to formal learning investments if you have the ability to make them.
Thanks so much for that, Jane. I'm going to shift gears on you here. And since our audience is healthcare, they'd be very interested in understanding how the organization can tie in employee development to their EHR investment. You know, having a discussion about the extensive training that's required to teach staff and providers to use an electronic health record, and knowing it's one of the larger costs for the organization for implementation and an opportunity for, you know, realizing that transformation in care. I think you'd agree with me that in order to get the most out of your EHR, you really need to have a big push to educate your employees, but how do you tie that together?
Yeah, electronic health records or EHRs, along with really any computer system implementation, you can't bank on the fact that if you build it, they will come. I've spent a lot of time in my career working with leaders and information system staff to help them really understand that the future users of their systems, who they are and what they need to really assume that they're gonna use it. Get them involved early in actually developing the systems and designing the systems if you can. And really think through the ways people will be using the systems or their workflows so that when you're teaching them how to use these computer systems, you're teaching them in the context of their work whenever you possibly can. That's going to increase the likelihood that they'll put it to use. If you think about any of the software you use, most of us don't use it to its fullest potential. I will tell you, these electronic health records are robust systems with unbelievable potential. It's not just the EHRs. Most of the software these days we're implementing, people are using a small fraction of it. So it's really worth the investment, not just to do upfront training, but to help people optimize these robust systems with ongoing coaching, practice, different scenarios, and accountability to do so. Nothing worse than saying, okay, everybody's got to use this system, and then nobody holds them accountable. So you've got to look more holistically here, too, as a real change management strategy to ensure you're providing the upfront education for the early adopter use of the system, and then optimization education and resources to help them continue to learn and grow at different levels as they get used to just using the system in the context of their work.
You know, Jane, you probably had a lot of experience in working with the senior leadership to understand that this is not an expense, it's an investment. How do you pitch that so that the organization really gets on board and is totally behind that?
Well, I will tell you, it's not always an easy sell. And I've spent much of my career doing just that, working on making the business case for the return on this investment. You know, it of course it depends on the context. How do you make the business case for leadership development? How do you make the business case for customer service training, electronic health record education, Microsoft Office? Of course it depends on what it is you're proposing. But you can easily look at the costs for not doing it. For example, if you think about an electronic health record, most of these organizations are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on systems, and in many cases, millions. If you have this robust system and people aren't making the most of it, think of all the high-risk consequences that the organization will likely suffer, whether it's financial, with not getting the right financial data into the system, or customer service, having insufficient information to provide service to customers, or clinical quality, patient care. The risk factors of sub-optimizing an electronic health record, just as one example, are numerous. When we were implementing at North Shore, you I'm sure recall, every single one of North Shore's major business objective was influenced by the electronic health record. So in that case, we had a real strong opportunity to make a business case. What happens if the employees aren't not only using it, but making the most of this massive investment? You take a different, but not too different, approach when it comes to leadership development. Where I work today at the college, we need to ensure we have future leaders that are ready for when a retirement wave hits us. And so we've got to invest now for future readiness. The organization is very clear that that's a worthwhile investment. You just have to frame it up in the context of business goals.
You know, there's one other challenge that we hear repeatedly from our clients. And, you know, they talk about the approach to training, the influence on the implementation strategy, but they really struggle with some of the streamlining of workflows and standardization of policies and procedures. And that really has to have an impact on training and, you know, ensuring that the staff can use the EHR appropriately. Have you seen any best practices or ways that you think other organizations can approach that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've seen it done really, really well, and I've seen it done really, really poorly. And so if you think about it from the end user's point of view, try learning a new computer system that hasn't really been thought through with the adjacent workflows. It's clunky. It doesn't work. And so sometimes, unfortunately, you don't figure that out until you're in the classroom trying to train people this new software. And they're saying, but this is awkward. You know, why do I have to go three screens over when I have only 2 minutes to admit a patient? Why do I have to take these 10 steps when I can used to be able to do it in three? So working up the pipeline earlier in the development process to match up the software with updated workflows is essential to both making the most of your software and to improving the experience for your employees who are your users of the software and can make or break the patient and customer experience. So early adoption of workflow analysis and alignment to the software is critical to any kind of electronic health record successful implementation and certainly the training that goes with it.
You know, just to touch on one specific issue, I was having a discussion with a client about the use of super users and the value provided not only during training, but also with the acceptance and adoptance across the organization. Have you seen that as well?
Oh, super users are super, truly. If they live up to their title, they are invaluable. Super users not only give credibility having a peer using the system and hopefully using it really well, but they're an endless ongoing resource once you've completed initial training to reinforce and support. Realistically, people overestimate what can happen in initial software training or EHR training as an example. You're barely learning the basics when you're first exposed to a system. Super users can be invaluable in being there on the job to reinforce and support. Once you get beyond those very basics of logging in and basic navigation, to really helping make the most use of the system in day-to-day workflows. Super users are something you should try and sustain as long as you possibly can. And you may recall when we worked at North Shore, we kept them for years. And especially because the system kept evolving, upgrading, changing, adding new modules. You need to keep your super users in place as long as you can and find incentives to do so for them.
Well, you've always said there's a nugget that you take away from every conference webinar that you go to. And I think my nugget for today is certainly that the cost of training for EHR implementation should be regarded as an investment rather than an expense, because without it, organizations risk spending money on EHRs without realizing the benefits. And I see the tie to employee development with EHR investments. And investing in that training of a core group of internal staff members on all aspects of the system, it's going to pay large dividends for a network and for the health system itself. You know, Jane, you know, it's gone by so quickly. We're approaching the end of our time today, and wondered if you had any final thoughts for our audience.
Fran, I've enjoyed our discussion, really. It's been fun. And I would say, just in terms of some parting thoughts, those organizations that really understand the value of investing in their employees create an organizational feel and culture that is really what is often called a learning culture. The more employees sense that the organization cares about their learning and growth, the more they're going to dive into and put forward that discretionary effort, whether it's in learning a new electronic health record or any other computer software system, or learning their role-specific responsibilities, or learning subjects like service and leadership and management and anything else that might be critical to maximizing their productivity and their engagement in their role. They're learners. They're going to apply it across all different domains. And the way that organization can facilitate that kind of a employee that's hungry to learn, it's not just hire those that say they're hungry, but provide a culture and an investment in those employees that they believe the organization truly cares about them and is willing to invest in their future.
Well, thank you so much, Jane. You know, you've always been an inspiration to me, and you've really shaped the lifelong learner that I've become, and I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
Hey, it's my absolute pleasure. You're a delight. Thank you, Fran.
Thank you. And this is going to conclude our show for today. So we have plenty more information for you on our website. That's at singolaconsulting.com. And also check out our blog and articles we've posted from other industry leaders. And as always, tweet at us at Singola, C-O-N-S-L-T, if you'd like to continue the conversation. And we'll talk with you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you for joining us today, and please visit us at singolaconsulting.com and stericyclecommunications.com to learn more about how we can help your organization realize your investments. Remember to always put the patient at the center of every decision you make.